You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or online store. Create your own space today by visiting squarespace.com and use offer code TREK10 to save 10%. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the Journey!
Now, wait, as you might have guessed, we're one To the Journey shouter shy. Lori is taking the Delta Flyer out this week. She had to go on vacation, and she had to go off-planet. You know, I think she had some sort of spirit quest or a Kuchimoya moment where she needed the flyer for herself.
Oh, God. Is Chakotay with her?
No, I think he instructed her, like helped make her make a medicine blanket. But
oh, thank goodness!
But it's just her. It's just
anytime Chakotay's on a shuttle, you know that's a recipe for disaster.
It's either going to get captured or destroyed. But still, they consider him a great pilot. I don't.
Yeah.
Know.
What? No. So Lori's on extended shore leave.
That's correct, but this week we will try to work on it without her, but I think we'll have an easier time with this episode just because there is a plethora of information to talk about, and that is because we are doing a character analysis of the Doctor.
Boom!
That's
yes.
Right. This is our last character analysis of the main characters, because we've done everyone from Janeway all the way down to Kes, so...
Yeah, maybe are we saving the best for last?
Some people would definitely think of it that way. I mean,
I mean,
the Doctor, I mean, think about the arc. Think about the arc out of every single character on Voyager and then look at the Doctor. I mean, it's not even close. I mean,
no.
Even with Seven, it's not even close because once Seven's character peaked, it plateaued for a very long time.
Right. Well, they worked very hard to develop her character, but they developed the Doctor throughout the whole series. He's got 7 years on Seven's Four.
That's true. So he has the advantage on that one. That's a good point. So, I mean, for the advantage, I mean, normally when we do character analysis, we do first impressions. And with Seven, we couldn't do what she looked like in Caretaker because we didn't know. But in this one, we can. And he was... Caretaker Doctor is very different from in-game Doctor.
Oh, totally. Yes.
So, Char, how about you start us off? What was your first impression of the Doctor and Caretaker?
Okay. This is a great way to start off because, okay, yeah, chronologically it makes sense. But then also, yeah, you know what? If you would have told me that the Doctor would have ended up the most developed and rich, complex, and entertaining character of the whole series, I would have probably laughed in your face. That jerk of a holographic Doctor? No. Really? We're talking Caretaker Doctor here. I mean, he's pretty dry. He's very much within the parameters of his programming, which are pretty straight and narrow at this point. And he's not even throwing out sarcastic one-liners yet. He's just a very basic guy. And he's just... in over his head, realizing, wow, this ship is in big trouble, and I am the only Doctor here.
I thought it was great that we got to see his first activation. Like, this was essentially his birth.
Yeah.
Because this is the first time that the Voyager EMH was activated. The thing is, though, this is what really bothers me, because throughout the series, the Doctor always refers to this moment in Caretaker as the first time he was activated. We hear that all the time. It's like, oh, back in the day when I was first activated, blah, 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 blah. But then we see the episode Relativity, where Seven of Nine goes back in time.
Yes.
And we see Voyager in Jupiter Station, and Janeway is in sickbay, and then activates the Doctor.
Yeah. Did they do, like, a Men in Black on him, where they just wiped his memory? It was just a test? And he doesn't remember anything about it? That's all I can think of to understand that.
Yeah. They cleared the buffer... and I think it's just the producers forgetting themselves
again. Once again, yes.
But it just bugged me to no end. I was like, no!
I know! Especially during such a good episode. I like Relativity quite a bit. But that
Yeah,
that kind of got me worked up a little bit. Hey, no! No, you don't take away that moment in Caretaker. No way! Not after all this!
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I felt like Caretaker was such a great exposure to the Doctor because we got to see him just bam, bam, bam. Like, we could tell, like, in those first moments, we could tell his personality, his technological limitations, how he reacts in a crazy situation, how methodical he is, and also how bitchy he can be.
And he definitely was.
Yeah, exactly. And I just thought it was a great first meeting. And right off the bat, we know the character. I mean, even with Tom Paris, I mean, the first time we see Tom, we kind of get that flyboy-esque mentality, but we need some exposition before we realize that he's the bad boy. He got drummed out of Starfleet. And with this one, first moment, first scene, bam, we know who this person
is. And what's really cool is if you watch Endgame, well, if you watch Caretaker and you watch Endgame back to back, watch the difference in the Doctor. We're going basically from machine to, well, almost man. It's a very stark difference. And I give Bob Picardo a lot of credit for that because he had so much involvement in the direction that his character took. He added so much to it. I think he is the Doctor. Nobody else could have been this person, not this way.
Just to sidestep just a little bit and then get back to that. That's a great idea, Char, that you have to watch Caretaker and then Endgame. That would make an amazing marathon if you watched Encounter at Farpoint and then All Good Things.
Oh my gosh.
And then
I gotta do that.
Yeah, you watch Emissary and then What You Leave Behind and, you know, Caretaker, then Endgame, and then you would watch Broken Bow, and then you could choose between These Are the Voyages and the one before that,
right?
You know, if it's up to
you. Depending on whether or not that last episode is technically in your canon or not.
But I totally want to do that. Now, like, it'd be harder with the original series because there really was no series finale.
No.
But yeah, I totally want to do that now. But yes, okay, so Picardo. Yes, I cannot imagine anybody else playing the Doctor. I really can't.
Not at all. It was so meant to be. That was destined for him and him alone.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm trying to think of other actors who are of his caliber and also his physicality. Mm-hmm. And the people I'm thinking of is like, nope, completely different character. Yeah, they'd be named the Doctor, but they would not be anything close to how the kind of gravitas that Picardo brings to that character.
Absolutely.
He made it just, like, it could have just been a boring hologram, like a piece of technology for the rest of the season, where, like, that dry Doctor, kind of like in Battlestar Galactica, the Doctor is, he's gruff, he smokes, and, you know, when he's examining you, and he's just like, okay, that's his personality, no growth, no nothing. Now, granted, the Doctor wasn't a main character in Battlestar Galactica, but you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
Like, they could have established the personality and then never touched it, and then like, right, oh, that's the tone of sickbay.
Yes,
but they didn't do that here.
He could have been a very static character, is what I think you're getting at.
Thank you. You just basically summed up my 5 minutes.
Well, there you go. But it's true. He's a hologram. He could have been very one-dimensional, and we could have not cared one bit at all about him. Instead, he became, I think, one of the most memorable and best-developed characters in all of Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's saying a lot.
Yeah. Because if you look at how character-driven Star Trek is, out of all of the series, and we say this all the time, but I never get tired of saying it. Yes, we as Star Trek fans love action, we love phasers, we love cloaking device, we love the technology, we love the action, we love the battles, but what makes us come back is for the characters and the decisions that they have to make and the confrontations that they're set up against. And he is, out of the entire continuum of episodes, Picardo and the Doctor is by far the most examined personality and showed growth and arc.
Absolutely.
And I think what we should do is we should talk about some of those moments, some of those painful, but also and not necessarily always painful moments that the Doctor had to go through in order to become sentient, because he didn't start off that way. No hologram starts off sentient.
Right.
No android starts off sentient. One absolutely is, you know, when he discovered his family. And
oh, his holographic family?
His holographic family and the pain of losing them.
Oh, certainly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one moment when he definitely realized that, like, he doesn't understand the entire, you know, breadth of human emotion, even though he's been programmed to feel certain things.
Absolutely. I would say even before that, you could talk about Life Signs, where he goes basically on his first date with Dinara Pell and falls in love.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic episode.
What's the episode where basically there's some sort of radiation and it makes him think that he's human, who is running a simulation of how a hologram would exist on like Barclay was in it.
Oh, are you talking really early season 2?
Oh, really? Yeah, this is really, really early.
I think it's called Projections.
Yes, it is. Projections. You're so good at that.
Oh, thank you. I try. I don't always get them, but I try.
Now that is a good episode where we just go through this whole, you know, cluster of just this mind trap and just where, like, is he human? Is he real? Now, obviously, we all know how it's really going to end.
Well, yeah, of course. We know at the end. The reset button will be pressed.
Yeah. But I love that moment when Chakotay, like, was projecting himself into the room. And, like, he totally, like, kneels down and gets super serious and calm like Chakotay does. He's like, what you've shown us is, it's not what you're made of, but what you do or how you feel, you know, like, he just started getting, like, super, I'm not saying it verbatim, but he gets, like, super inspirational.
Yes, and, he does.
And, like, even in, like, season 2, they start to realize the Doctor is not just a hologram. He is becoming something more.
Right. Even that early on, he was developing into a much more complex character, and he was starting to get some really great one-liners. One of my favorites is from Threshold, where Tom Paris has been brought into sickbay and he's choking on the water in Neelix's coffee. And he asks B'Elanna, has Paris ingested anything recently? And she says, just some of Neelix's coffee. And the Doctor says, it's a miracle he's even alive. I mean, that right there, I mean, that is our wonderful sarcastic Doctor that we all know and love now.
Yes.
But that was just starting to come into it.
He is definitely the king of one-liners in Voyager.
For sure.
There's one character in every single series, and not just in Star Trek, who's known for the one-liners. You know, like, you have the Dowager in Downton Abbey, and you have Jesse from Breaking Bad, and it's just, I'm just throwing some stuff out here, of course. But it's just, the Doctor definitely makes you laugh the hardest. And, I'm trying to run through some episodes, and there was another one where the Beowulf episode, Heroes and Demons.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was a different character growth where he even chooses a name in that episode. People often forget that. He chose a name. He really did.
One of my favorites, too, that I was really hoping he would stick with. Schweitzer.
Schweitzer. And, like, he disposed of it because someone he cared about died literally in his arms. And that was the last time he heard that name, it was in pain. And I thought that was a great growth moment for him because he developed a connection with someone, another hologram, although she wasn't sentient, but he chose a name. And then he thought it would be a great situation. Like, yeah, everybody's going to call me Schweitzer. It's going to be great. And then, you know, somebody he cares about dies while saying his name. And he's like, ah, crap, can't use that anymore.
And he kind of has a history of doing this. In the episode Real Life, he goes by Kenneth. His wife calls him Kenneth.
That's
and
right.
We don't ever hear that again. And while we're on the topic of names, we have to mention that prior to the start of the series, he did have a name. He was named after his likeness, the developer who created him, Doc Zimmerman.
Oh, was that in the show notes? Like, that's what they were going to go with?
That was in the series Bible, and a lot of the really early interviews, but when they were shooting season 1, before it even premiered, they called him Doc Zimmerman. And actually, even, take a drink, guys, in the first of the novels, he was referred to as Doc Zimmerman. And then, of course, once they had established, oh, we don't want to give him a name yet, that quickly vanished. But just to throw that out there, for those who may have not known, he was going to be Doc Zimmerman.
Okay. So we have in pre-production Doc Zimmerman. In Life Signs, she called him
Schmollis.
Schmollis. And in Heroes and Demons, he was called Schweitzer. In real life, it was Kenneth. Mm-hmm. And in Endgame, in an alternate reality, he was Joe.
All of which he ended up not going by at all.
Exactly. So, like, he's... So, him trying to choose a name, like, it wasn't just like, oh, no, he never chose a name. No, he chose, like, five, but they never actually stuck or happened because of the reset button.
Yeah, I think he just got too used to being called Doctor.
Mm.
I think that was just a thing. That's what he was known as. That's what people called him.
There was another one. There was another one.
Ooh,
it was it was another alternate reality where Kes was jumping through and he had hair. It was an artist. Oh.
Van Gogh?
Yes, it was Van Gogh.
That's what it was? Really? Yeah. That was just a guess.
Dr. Van Gogh. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So
I forgot all about that, obviously.
Another name that he chose that we didn't go by.
He tried so many names on. I mean, could you imagine if we all decided not to go by our given name, or we're just born without names, and then we decide later on as we're older what our name is going to be?
Oh, that would
be chaos.
How
many times would we go through this trap?
I was watching in 30 Rock, there was a guy who's saying that he's like, oh yeah, no, kids should be free to make their own mistakes and do what they want. He's like, the world would be chaos if we did that. Like, think about people naming themselves. He's like, you know, my son Spider-Man chose his name at 4 years old and he's never regretted it.
Prime example. Very good.
That's exactly what would happen, because if I was a kid, I would have named myself Batman. Hell, if I could do it right now, I'd name myself Batman.
And I think it would be fitting. I don't see any problem with this.
I don't either. But there would be like a billion Batmans. So
there probably would be. So instead of Matthews and Samuels and Henrys of the world, there's going to be just tons of Batmans.
Yeah. Like, instead of Mohammed being the most popular name, it would totally be Batman.
Okay.
Well, it is. Mohammed is the most popular
name.
Yes,
it is. I see no problem with that shifting to Batman myself. But, yeah.
Okay, so there's one thing that we have to talk about that is absolutely pivotal in his character growth. And that was a distinct change between, like, there was this Doctor, and then there was, like, there was pre-Doctor and post-Doctor, and that was the mobile emitter.
Mm-hmm.
So, first off, let's say, like, okay, mobile emitter, cheesy cop-out, or show necessity. What do you think?
Oh, I so wish Lori was here, because she wrote an article on this very topic.
And everyone should go to check.fm and find it.
Yes. Yeah, she argued whether or not it was an easy out or if it was an absolute necessity to the show, and did a nice job, really, of showing the pros and cons of both. Because can you imagine the rest of the series without the Doctor and his mobile emitter, all the away missions he would not be on, how that would affect the story? Is it a good or bad thing? I don't know. It's 29th century. He wasn't supposed to have this technology. He wasn't supposed to have.
Yeah.
I don't know. Any thoughts on this?
I'm all for it. I think it was a great idea. And, like, even if it is cheesy, I don't care, because it was fantastic. I thought it was cool. I thought it was cool looking. I thought it was nice that we got to see it the entire time. I thought it was a great... It was definitely a plot device, but I thought it was a really nice one, because we got so many stories out of the plot device. We wouldn't have had the 29th century Borg if it wasn't for the emitter. We wouldn't have gotten that, I think, Renaissance Man episode where he got to change into every single person and roam the ship, mm-hmm. trying to save Janeway. Let's see. What else wouldn't happen?
We wouldn't have had Author.
Oh, yeah, with a backpack and the emitter backpack. Yes, that's what I was thinking of.
Yes, his burden.
Yes, his burden.
Because even though this was advanced technology he wasn't even supposed to have, it was a stigma to him.
Yeah.
Because he had to have it or else it just wouldn't work for him. He wasn't like he could just roam about the ship, you know, like every other member of the crew. Mm-hmm.
It was his scarlet letter saying, I'm different.
Yes, exactly.
Now, if you watch Endgame in the future, if you notice, you do not see his mobile emitter on him.
Which makes you wonder
what happened. I love that kind of stuff because it was never explained. I love it. They were just like, okay, does he no longer need his mobile emitter? Did he wise up and not just put it on his shoulder so that anyone could hit it and then knock him out?
Right.
Which happened in Equinox.
Oh, yeah.
Where apparently all you have to do is just tap it with a pad and then it
falls right off. No sweat.
You'd think there'd be a way that like he could like put it. Okay, he doesn't have organs, so he's essentially a hollow being. So why couldn't you just like put it inside his fake rib cage? You know?
Well, that's just the thing, though. I mean, yes, you could conceal it so that it's not visible, but I don't know if you just smack the doctor around a little bit, would the same thing happen? Would it be the same effect?
I don't know.
I think it's a reminder to the audience more than anything. Not necessarily to him, but it does make sense that he would conceal it, especially if he does feel so stigmatized by it.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, I see it. Yeah, you're right. I think you're absolutely right that it was more of a reminder for us than anybody else. It's kind of like in Big Bang Theory when Raj needs to drink to talk to women. So people can point out, hey, he's talking to a woman, he's not drinking, what's the deal?
Right.
Bad move, producers.
Exactly, you know. Yeah, it's just one of those things where it's a small detail, but it's an important detail.
Absolutely. Okay, so, yeah, I like the emitter. I thought it opened up a wide range of new possibilities for him, but it was still a limitation. It still had rules,
yes.
And they still followed those rules, but it also brought out some stories that were spawned from it. So I am in favor of it, absolutely.
Okay.
That's my position.
You know what? When the show was airing, I thought it was an absolute cop-out. And I thought, this is just lazy. How dare you guys? You're not supposed to have this technology. Why didn't Captain Braxton take it back? Or why didn't he make sure that that got reset with the timeline and all that? And it seemed at the time that why wouldn't it make just as much sense to put in holo emitters through the rest of the ship as they had been talking about? Because they were doing this in Persistence of Vision, where they were talking about maybe installing holographic emitters on key areas of the ship, like the bridge. And, of course, that wasn't going so well at the time, but they could have easily followed up on that. And I thought, well, this is just the easy out for that. But no, you're totally right. It definitely had a positive impact on the Doctor, gave us some great stories, and so, hindsight, I totally think it's a great idea.
I remember watching Future's End and just like, you know, I was in middle school when Voyager was on. So it's just like, oh, that's awesome. You know, I was just like any kind of new technology that it was introduced or anything like that. And anything remotely close to that. I was a total fanboy where I'm just like, that's awesome. You know, like the only way it could have been cooler to me is if he had like a lightsaber.
Or if he was Batman.
Which
yeah, he could be. He's a hologram.
Kenneth Batman Schweitzer. Yes, so that would be, yes, I think that's the name he should have gone by. But let's talk, we have some time left, so let's talk about a little bit about the relationships that he had, not just with his fake family or the woman in life signs, but let's talk about, I mean, you can't talk about the Doctor without talking about Seven or Kes or Tom. The relationships is what makes the show and what makes the character. And I really enjoyed his relationship with Kes, and I would have liked to have seen it explored a little bit further. Now, I don't want you to read into that, people listening at home. I'm not suggesting anything of that nature. I just would have liked to have seen more of Kes in sickbay and her. Like, we talked about this in the Kes episode, where I wanted her to be a little bit more medical-oriented than she was.
Yeah.
And I felt that that could have bred a lot of more moments of the Doctor kind of mentoring her around. What do you think about his relationships overall?
Let's talk about Kes, because I thought that was a fantastic pairing. They had such a great friendship, and what I loved about it the most was that they challenged each other. You know, the Doctor gave her medical training and kind of just threw everything he possibly could at her study-wise, but at the same time, she was challenging him to become more, to be more. Those very early days, it was her who said, you need to be more than just the sum of your programming. You have to evolve. You have to handle this situation. Because in the earlier days, he wasn't doing such a hot job. He said, no. I'm here as an emergency medical supplement, not as a full-time doctor. And she said, stand up. There's nobody else. You have to do this.
Yeah, yeah. And she was the one who did the whole gave him like the flu or something longer than he...
Yeah, one of my favorite moments. She programs it to go a lot longer than he wanted it to. And that's when he really learned what it's like to be sick.
Absolutely. And also, Kes was his biggest champion.
Absolutely. Yeah, not only did she challenge him, but she fought for him.
Yeah, to the rest of the crew, and specifically to Janeway. I mean, they had a conversation where the two of them sat down in her office, and she said, no, he is sentient. He deserves to be treated that way. Janeway was like, no, he's not. He's a replicator. You know, like, he's a tool that we need to use. He may look real, but he's not.
Right.
And
this was season one.
This was season one, absolutely. And it's Janeway definitely changed. But I did like that Janeway was still... was not like, oh yeah, do whatever you want, you know, like, oh, let's just treat him like a regular member of the crew. She was always the one who tried to keep things in a certain perspective. Like when he got the mobile emitter, he's like, maybe I could get my own quarters now, and she's like, one step at a time.
She always kept things in perspective for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And when he wanted to become the ECH,
yeah, we gotta talk about this.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about the Janeway, doctor relationship and kind of integrate the ECH. Like, the doctor is a very vain person, and he's constantly wants to grow and change, but also, like, not just to help the crew, but, you know, for his own personal gratification. But then when Janeway found out that, okay, maybe he does want to just, you know, grow to help the crew, maybe I should let him be the ECH and have that cool 4-pip animation on his neck.
Totally. And then, of course, in Tinker, Tenor, Dr. Spy, he gets thrown into having to be the ECH. It's like your dreams come true, and you've been dreaming about it for so long that when it becomes real, you're shocked. It's surreal. Yeah. That's what happened to him, and he has to go through this situation. But Janeway talks him through it.
Right. And I thought that was great, and I thought it was... I thought it was cool to see him kind of thrown into the fire and see how he pulled it off.
Right. And then once he got into it, he was just a little too into it, because that's the doctor, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to say he's an all or nothing kind of a guy, but when he commits himself to doing something, he really throws himself into it. And that's when Janeway, of course, tells him, tone it down, doctor. You're just a little too excitable about this now. But all in all, it did great. So, very quickly, let's go through Seven here, because this was a very touching relationship.
Yes.
He helped her so much, he fell in love with her and could not reciprocate, or it could not be reciprocated by her. She was not in love with him.
Yeah.
Unrequited love. It's painful to watch, but it's beautiful, too.
Okay, so I feel like I may be the only person who wasn't that crazy about Seven and the Doctor potentially getting together.
I never wanted them to get together. I loved the unrequited love thing. I love that he fell in love with her and just knew that that was somebody he could not have.
Well, see, even that, I wanted some sort of detachment, some sort of professional detachment.
Oh,
because,
really?
Yeah, because it just always bothered me a little bit, because I felt like, you know, he's a professional and he has helped her through so many things, like biological, emotional, relationship-wise. He is basically in charge of her humanity, besides Janeway and Seven. Like, he was in charge of her, you know, biological humanity and making sure that she was healthy. Yeah. His lessons and her implants and everything that came with it. And she relied on him so heavily, and she was so, I don't want to say Seven was innocent, but at least naive of the ways of humanity.
Yes.
That because he was so integral in that, it felt a little almost incestuous to me.
I don't know. I think at the same time, though, it's very tough to know where the friend zone lies. I mean, humans have a problem with this all the time. When you're in the dating game or when you're out meeting people, it's really hard to determine, okay, do I have feelings for this person? Do I need to keep this on a strictly professional basis, like what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
It's very complicated. And since the doctor is such a complicated being himself, I think it makes sense. But I see where you're coming from, too. I'm just disagreeing with you. Sorry.
No, that's fine. That's fine. It's just my opinion, absolutely, because, like, I'm not saying there's one way that's right or the other. It's just when he thought he was going to die, And he told somebody, he's like, I have to admit my feelings for you. And I was like, I'm sorry. And it's just like, it never would have worked between us. You know, like, it's just something like that. Like the stolen glances in sickbay. And I just, that's all I wanted from it. Like, that's all that I wanted from that relationship was that cute little, oh, we could never be, but I'm, you know, I fell for you. But then as soon as he finds out that he's okay, he's like, never mind. That's essentially what I wanted. But I mean, That's just me.
All right.
So, I mean, we're out of time. So final thoughts here, Char.
Oof. Well,
can you sum it up in any way?
It's so hard because this is one of the best Star Trek characters of all freaking time.
All time.
Why don't I just leave it at that?
There you go. We here at To the Journey believe that the Doctor gets a 2 holographic thumbs way up. I can't think of one Doctor episode that I didn't like. Maybe The Darkling.
Okay, yeah, I'm with you there.
Yeah, so like I was just about to say, no, they're all great. But they're like, no, there's so many of them that, you know, not all of them are that great.
No,
but
even he got a stinker here and there. But usually you knew that when you had a Doctor episode in your hands, you were going to get something good.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, that's it for this To the Journey. But this isn't the only thing that's been going on. And so many things are being talked about at Trek.fm. So what we have here is a quick look of what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek.fm.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
Looking for Parmok in all the wrong places.
Well, and you also get the feeling here that she's only... Worf really is only being rejected because she's not interested. It has nothing to do with whether or not Worf is Klingon enough or any of that. She's just not interested. She's interested in Quark.
Earl Grey.
Romulans on TNG.
You know, it's this TV trope of an actor playing their own descendant or, you know, it doesn't make sense. Okay, fine. If you want to...
Right, because Data never plays his grandfather or great-grandfather or own descendant, but, you know, that's a terrible storyline.
Or Michael Dorn.
The Ready Room.
Well, I think after what he went through with the Zindi, you know, you see he's become very jaded. He's very cynical about things, and it would be easy for him to stay in that place, and it would continue to grow, and he would become nothing like the person he was, and even lose sight of the person that he was and never be able to get back there.
To the Journey!
Voyager's Funniest Moments.
They're seeing Sandrines for the first time, and you see that pool shark guy who is such a chauvinist pig jerk. Who says something to the effect, to B'Elanna, something like, treat a lady like a tramp, and a tramp like a lady. It works every time. And she says, Paris, did you program this guy? And he's like, yeah, why? She said, he's a pig, and so are you.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Battlestar Galactica.
But with the new series, it really tried to delve much deeper into the social commentary. You know, in a lot of ways, I think it was an excellent portrayal of a post-9/11 world. And I think it touched on a lot of aspects of our society.
Warp 5.
Hoshisato.
I'm not so sure that I can relate to the background as providing an explanation for her personal insecurities. I perhaps wondered if a part of that, I mean, you put her on Earth in her element, doing her teaching, working with languages in that safe environment. I don't think she would have the same level of insecurity.
Trek News and Views.
Barge of the Dead.
So to actually get a character episode that doesn't just explore B'Elanna but explores the Klingon mythos at the same time, I mean, that was 2 for 1.
Literary Treks.
David R. George III, Revelation and Dust.
And it feels like an evolution for Starfleet as well in the way that they build a starbase.
Well, I'm glad that came across because that was sort of one of the things that I was going for. You wanted it to be an evolution in Starfleet's construction of starbases. Mm-hmm. It should be something brand new. And because it's an important station, because it's in an important location, it really needed to be, I thought, a grand station.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all these shows to get your daily Trek fix. We have new shows happening every day, and you can find them on iTunes, Stitcher, Windows Phone, Zune, anywhere. You can find us anywhere to stream or download, or you can just go to the website at trek.fm/PD. That way you can get the entire directory and all the links that you need.
Boom. You can find us. I think we're pretty much on every platform available, is what you're saying.
Yes. every way you can think of. So next week, we're going to have a really great episode for you. I am super excited about this, Char. I think this is probably one of the most menacing but also dynamic and interesting aliens out there in the universe, and that is going to be Species 8472.
I love how you build us up every week. It's going to be a great episode. But you know what? You're absolutely right, because Species 8472 is going to give us a lot to talk about, and it's going to be a fantastic discussion.
All right, well, before we log out, here's a word from our sponsors. Please visit Squarespace, the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create a beautiful blog, website, portfolio, online store, or anything else you can think of. Go to squarespace.com for your free 14-day trial and use offer code TREK10 to save 10%. We'd like to thank Squarespace for their support of To the Journey and Trek.fm. Also, if you would like to personally support Trek.fm, please go to trek.fm/donate. There you can get exclusive themed badges and art prints that we use to thank you for your contribution, and their original illustration by Tobu Ushi. Everything you donate to Trek.fm is used to cover the cost of production, storage, and bandwidth needed to bring you this programming every week. All right, well, you can find me on Twitter at TheInsaneRobin, and Char, where can we find you?
You can find me at Oh the Profanity.
Well, thank you for listening, and tune in next week, because this has been To the Journey!
To the Journey!